The Optimist. Conversations with leaders and industries shaping Europe's future. Exploring the ideas and innovations driving progress across the continent.
AI is changing the world as we know it, and it's doing it at a pace that's completely unprecedented. Never before have we had the ability to analyze a picture, extract findings from a PhD thesis, or write a report literally at the click of a button. Yet, is it actually leading to better outcomes? Is AI's lightning speed helping us understand the world more deeply, make better decisions, or even write better reports? To unravel this complex web, I've brought a company and a leader that are really leading the world at optimizing how people and machines can work together. Jochen Ditscher, Senior Partner at Rollenberger, it's a pleasure to have you with us.
Thanks for having me and looking forward to the conversation.
Yeah, and look, before we dive in, you know, I have the privilege of speaking to so many experts in different fields as part of this podcast. And, you know, I have a feeling like it's like speaking to elite sports stars or elite musicians, because, you know, you've focused in your careers on different areas of expertise. And I guess the other thing I notice is that many of these professionals, they have their habits, their ways of going about their lives. What's a day in the life of Jochen Ditscher like? What's your routine? How do you get up in the morning? You know, do you have breakfast with your kids? Do you work out at the gym? What are your habits?
Maybe let's start with the morning, and then I'll give you some things that I try to do or avoid during the day. So actually, when I start the day, it's around 6 o'clock in the morning each day, and then I go for a walk with my dog. It actually takes me 1 hour normally. So if I'm not traveling, so I'll have my first 1 hour download of nature without anything else. I mean, there's certain times where I also have breakfast with my daughter and also with my wife, but most of the times I just spend time outside. And I'm telling you this because it's something that also is a habit in my life right now. So I try to avoid everything digital outside of what I need to do work related or conversation related or so forth. So there's basically there are old school books in my life. There is basically, I don't watch any movies. I just try to be as in a digital detox mode as much as possible, just to be able to process the things that I want to do and to achieve without this current influence of pings and topics flowing around in all of the channels.
You know, I want to go a bit deeper there, because it's a epidemic, I would say, of our current era, that we're constantly being bombarded by input. You know, you wake up in the morning, the first thing you do is you check your news feeds, you see what's happening around you. At work alone, you know, I have a rule before a podcast, because I need to be focused. I switch off all channels, Teams, emails, everything has to go away, because you need that space to focus. But it's inevitable once you get to work that you have to be engaged on those channels, because those are also the inputs. How do you balance that? How do you deal with it? Are you engaging with, you know, agents that help structure your day and prioritize your emails? Is artificial intelligence involved in your personal planning and workflows?
Actually, it is and it is not, right? So when I'm interacting in my professional life, there is an involvement in structuring the day, structuring the processes, and trying to also get the channels under control. I mean, we can get into this rabbit hole if you want to get the messaging under control, right? If I'm switching over to my private life, so I used to be some sort of a second screen, third screen junkie, and I try to fully avoid this right now. So if you would come to my house, you would see that I do the weekly planning with my wife, actually on a whiteboard, writing down what's happening each day. We do this each Sunday. So basically, yes, we have a shared calendar if I'm traveling, blah, blah, blah. But we try to do everything else offline. So it's a little bit it starts to get a little bit nerdish, yeah, because we also try to avoid, for instance, our daughter to be in this fully digital world, which is, we need to balance that to not make her an outsider. But being offline in your normal life, that's one of the key elements. And in the in professional life, it's let's call it like be as much as automatized as possible, just to get time for yourself to be able to answer the important questions or to ask the right ones. And that's basically where I spend lots of focus on.
You know, I think it's interesting as well, because in the digital workspace that we all live in, I mean, I have team members in Hamburg, in Munich, in Dusseldorf and Berlin. And so there's this kind of, it's always a challenge to find that mixture of presence. You're talking about presence, being aware, being in the physical world. You have the, you know, the digital tools as well. How much, anyway, if you were to look at your day, how much time is with humans sitting down, talking face to face? Because, you know, that was the hallmark of consulting. Right. It was about the relationship.
So if I just look at the amount of work that I need to handle in my daily business, I would just say it's mostly virtual, right? And that's something, if I would give you a number, maybe per week, it's 80% is virtual. However, if something is super important or you need really to have some quality time creating something, then I try to make it physical, right? Because I think if something is important, and that's maybe something where we disconnect already to Gen Z, because they see it as some sort of intruding their boundaries, right? But for me, it's if it's something is important, you come in person, and you give your counterpart your presence and your time.
How have things changed in the last 3 years? Because I mean, this is where Gen AI has really taken off. Has your job changed? Has the structure? I mean, you in the past, you know, the tasks that I used to get interns to do, they don't exist anymore.
I think it let me just not talk about the last 3 years, but more like the last 5 years, right? So it started off from the switch of being in presence to something super virtual, right? With all the efficiency gains that you had. And then it started to become like so easy to do the things in parallel. Then you could automate it, right? And then with the start of AI or the new AI tools, for me personally, there was the need to not get carried away by all these possibilities, right? So you were able to have 5 to 10 different train of thoughts that you would normally have in a conversation with a consultant or a whomsoever, right? But right now you could talk to the AI, yeah? And you just get carried away by all these possibilities. And it's some sort of, for me, started to get a Stack Overflow because of all of that. You started to lose your own presence by just being able to explore so many topics. So I tried also to restrict it now to being more simple also in how I interact with the tools. Anyhow, I think the change that we see right now, and it's basically along the lines that I just described, is yes, there is the need of all these tools, but if something is important and it needs to be real, let's call it like this, or authentic, then it is again in person. It's so easy to be carried away by maybe something that's just generated on while we are talking, right? I mean, it would be super hard for you, Dale, now to judge if an automated AI just in parallel runs here and generates my answers, and I'm reading that out loud, right? And to just avoid this and give you my full presence, it would need to be in person. And that's also the core belief of, if you think of human machine interaction in the future, also with hybrid models, there's going to be all in my perspective, always something in person, because that's going to have a super high value.
Yeah, it's so fascinating actually as you go deeper into it, because there's so many aspects of the embodied experience, you know, as being a human in a physical space. And look, you know, I'm the CEO of an events company, so you know, I believe in physical interaction. It's kind of my holy grail. But there's something about it, you know, when we walk into a room physically together, we look each other in the eyes, and there's a physical presence. We shake hands. There's skin on skin. It's haptic. It's experiential, and it's that gives you a stronger bond than, you know, than just a call or something via screens. And I think it's something we need to remember is that actually maybe the value's increased of these things in a world where there's endless options for information. Because does information have value anymore in a world where knowledge is free, you know?
Exactly. And I mean, this is exactly the point, right? So the information or person or the combination of information with personal interaction in a world, I would not say free, but in a world where you really need to be spot on with collecting the right information to get the right results in the right time with the right persons, the interaction of people will have a key role, right? So as you, if you now would go, we had it in the beginning with the channels, right? If you would go now from X to YouTube to whatsoever, you can simply get any information that you want in any tonality or quality that you like. But the difference of us using this then in a productive way is Dale and myself talking about what we really want to do with that, right? And this is going to have a high value in this future world where you don't maybe even in 2 years from now you will not be able to even judge if something that you're talking to is an avatar or a virtual person.
Yeah. It reminds me of something as well. You're talking about this availability of information, and also because you started your whole story about your hour-long walk without any digital interactions, without any screens. It's about distraction management. And I think maybe in your industry, is this something you're noticing with this huge uptick where everybody has a consultant literally at their fingertips, that being able to properly evaluate and really score and understand what's useful and put context around that makes consultants like Roland Berger even more important than ever in this era of abundant information?
I think this is my core belief, and I give you my visualization of that, right? So maybe you know the movie Inception, right? So this, the story about people building up dreams to just extract information out of spies or whatsoever, right? And these realities created by in the movie by people, right? But these realities for me stand for the realities created by AI, right? So it's perfectly created. Yeah, you're standing on the edge of a mountain. You look into the valley. You cannot distinguish it from being artificial, right? But if you step into this world, there always needs to be, as in the movie, someone. If he takes the right perspective, he understands that this is a fake reality, right? So there is this scene where they are standing in the streets. And all of a sudden, they look at the sky, and they see that there's this mirrored, mirrored upside down city version of their own, right? And someone telling you, "Come on, look up," and this is fake, right? This is going to be the role of a consultant in the future. Maybe this is a simple thing now, right? Just look ahead. But imagine something more complex, where it's not so easy to find the right perspective on understanding if something's fake or not, right? And this is going to be the future role of humans, and in particular of consultants, to have this perspective to tell you, look, this is not real. This is made up, and the possibilities of just creating the cities and the street sceneries, given by an AI, are infinite in the future, right? But but what's not infinite is people being able to understand the needed perspective to being able to judge that, right? And the perspective in the future, in my opinion, is coming from your sectorial, functional, or industry know-how that you bring to the table as an expert, because then you are able to understand if this is wrong or right.
You know, it's also, I mean, in some ways, a consultant, there are so many aspects. You know, you need to be an analyst. You need to be, you know, a psychologist sometimes, you know, to understand how things are working in the teams. You need to be, you know, a teacher as well. And actually, it reminds me of something, because I teach at University of Amsterdam, Amsterdam Business School. And I've noticed since generative AI, and this is what you're talking about in many ways in terms of the endless possibilities, you know, the mirror world that we get trapped into imagining is real. My students get lost. You know, in the past, a master's thesis, if it was quantitative, had to have a statistical modeling component. And the theories and possibilities they come up with when they're proposing their theses are just completely out of this world, you know, not even possible in a PhD. But this is, and I notice now that this reality check is what's the human who can say, yes, all of those things are theoretically possible, but you know what? The outcome you want is you want to get to here, and this is the shortest path, and that's how you're going to get there.
Exactly. I mean, it's like, I mean, if you look at how most of the current architectures in out there are built up, then it's like you're navigating in a probabilistic world, right? It's like something made out of distributions, of mathematical statistical distributions, right? And even by that, it's an endless universe is created by this kind of wave functions, whatever you call it, right? But to ground it in reality, you need to have this probabilistic functions collapse into something that's meaningful even for the real life, right? And I think, as you said, or you used the teacher, being a teacher, I think we need to teach, not even as a consultant, but even now handing over to next generation, we need to teach our children and the society on how to be able to collapse this kind of endless possibilities of wave function whatsoever into something that's meaningful. And it comes from experience, yeah, right? So you need to still train people to have this experience, but it's a tremendous shift in the way how we would structure our society from childhood to experienced worker, as information is always there at our fingertips. But you need to be able to use it in the right way. And that's going to be a huge challenge. And for most of the people, and I guess also for your students, super difficult to navigate and create something that's not completely nonsense.
Yeah. I think, you know, the core of what you're talking about here is this difference between possibility, and this is the wave function you're talking about, you know, probabilistic wave function versus, you know, collapsing that down to a singularity, a reality, something we can work with. Now, let's talk about some realities that we have to work with at every point. And now we've talked about teacher now, I mentioned before, psychologist. Now, when you come into teams, there's always a mix. You know, if you're working with big teams with new technology integrations, you're dealing with some people who are going to be reticent. They don't want it. They're afraid of it. They're scared of it taking their jobs. How do you deal with that going into a new environment where there's a, you know, a project, a pilot to bring AI to automate processes?
I think there is interestingly, there are two main themes here, right? So there is 70% of people that you talk to in this first contact phase, let's call it like this, they are excited on the possibilities to get rid of all the topics that, or all the tasks that they really hate, right? So, and imagine being someone who just compiles compiles numbers for reports that maybe are not read in the boardroom, but you need to create them and send them around, and even sometimes you test it by just copying white pages into it, and you notice no one was reading that. Yeah, so all of a sudden you have this this vision that this can be completely automated, and maybe on the receiving end, someone, a machine also reads a report. So it's basically out and up in the void, and no one cares. So that creates an excitement, right? Being able to handle emails, blah blah blah, everything that creates an excitement. But if we and this is also something, and maybe we can talk about this later, but this is not an AI first mindset. This is something super incremental, and it's not the leapfrogging impact on the daily life that we are going to see, right? But this anyhow, it creates excitement, and people are willing to work with it and are not afraid. Yeah. And then you have a second theme, and that's the theme on people that really think about, okay, how is it going to work out? Because my job is meaningful, my task is meaningful, I really like what I'm doing, I'm not bored by it. Yeah. And then most of the times, even this is found within managerial functions, and then they are afraid of getting stripped by that, either because they don't understand how the expertise that they have is going to transfer it in a meaningful way into a system, or they reflect on maybe also, as you started it, on the day in their work life, and understand that that they really like their work day, but they fear that this is going to not exist from a cultural behavior anymore, and then these people are really really afraid and are blocking the advance, right? And I would say the problem of implementing AI comes then from this smaller group of people, the 20 to, I don't know, 30% of people that are afraid, and this is where you really need to work, yeah, and where you really really need to help them see the possibilities. And if I would reflect on myself, then for me it's I don't see anything negative in this whole thing. If you are able to focus on your core task and to structure it in the right way, then the possibilities of AI is something super positive for us all. And that's how I also try to transfer it in the conversation to the people that are afraid of it.
You know, I guess that in any change, there's going to be winners and losers. I mean, you can go back through history, and there's the, you know, in England in the 1600s, 1700s, the Luddites, who were the frame breakers, who were smashing up the factories because they were terrified of automated weaving machines. You know, this has been the process throughout history. But the key is how you manage the change. So if you're going to be an AI loser, that your position is under pressure, under crunch. Firstly, what would those kinds of jobs or tasks be that are going to be automated? And then the second part of the question is, what would you suggest for people in those spaces? What are the areas where they can increase their skills and make themselves, I guess, robust in being valuable for the future automated world?
So I think it's a super, it's a difficult question, right? And if you not because I don't have a view on what's going to be automated or not, but just because I think that if you bring something to the table in your work life that is rooted in deep expertise, or maybe special empathy, or something that you are really, let's call it Champions League, you have a Champions League skill on something, my personal belief is that you don't need to be afraid that this is going to get away, that this is going to be lost in this AI transformation, because you will be able, you know, you will be able to use AI to even outperform everyone else in this skill, right? So, you know, if you, and that this is how I would think about it, right? So we as humans, we tend also in how we work on feedback. Let me just elaborate on this example. So we give feedback on things that other people are not good at, right? And we don't focus on what they are good at. And we give them most of the times, we give feedback on how I, Jochen Ditsche, would envision someone else to do the task, how I would do it, because I'm really good at it. And if it's not to the standard, I say, listen, you are not good at this, right? But that's the problem. So if other people then take this feedback and say, okay, I'm not good at this, blah, 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 then it might also be that they are not able to transfer this skill set into a valuable contribution in an AI world, right? But if they are really good at something and they use AI to boost this even further, also being able to take this perspective that we talked about, then they are going to create something meaningful even in an AI world. So I think, coming back to your question, you should ask yourself, is this what I'm doing? Am I really good at that? Or am I just doing it because of the money, or I'm happy that the job ends at 3 o'clock and then I can go swimming or something like this. So if you find something that you're really good at, you don't need to be scared of that this is going to get away, because you find a way to use AI to get even better and better and better. Yeah, but if you're just doing something because you're doing something, then there's going to be a problem, and that's going to be the universal truth for all that we're seeing going further. I would make the only exception right now, and I think we will talk about this later. I think in terms of physical work, so things where you really do something in a physical world, this is going to be a little bit different. Yeah. But except of that, I think the principle that I just described is going to hold.
There's actually a famous quote, I think, that goes along those lines, which is, don't be afraid of AI taking a job. Be afraid of the guy or girl who knows how to use AI. Because this is the human-machine interface still. It's the creation, co-creation. Great. Look, I'd say, really, I guess on this issue, you're talking about how you manage your skills in the workforce. Now, this is on the individual level. What about social change? What social change do you anticipate coming off the back of this huge AI revolution that's I guess, taking place around the world? And how do business prepare for that?
It's a big question, right? So it's the fundamental question on how we are going to evolve going forward. And I will not try to talk about what's going to happen if we hit singularity and there's a general universal intelligence, because this is then a completely different conversation. So let's just look at it from the next 2 years perspective. And I think if you look at this, and I connect now directly society with business, then we come from a maybe 100 years or longer belief that you can atomize work in a Tayloristic way and then generate roles out of it. Like, so this is the belief how you atomized work task and then you aggregate it in a meaningful way, and all of a sudden there's a role called sales, there's a role called branding, there's a role called all this stuff, right? And it completely makes sense to give it then to people and create organizations and businesses and so forth. But if you, I don't know how it is with you, Dale, but if you're, I have studied math, right? So when I came from university and stepped into my career, for me, it was not fully clear why there should be a sales department. Yeah. So, and it's not fully clear why you need a brand department. So it's something super fundamental that I was not used to, right? So for me, it's like, okay, I don't know why this should exist. Okay. And If you could now say, okay, this was naive, but if you would now step into a world of AI, you could say, if you don't need to associate tasks to humans because it can be automatized, yeah, then maybe there's a different form of aggregation of this work task that that are so completely different that we all don't really understand how to really associate to people, right? So maybe this different role that we talked about, okay, finding the reality, but it's a fundamental change if you take this thought, right? If you think about this, then you would say, okay, if you are, for instance, a founder, one-person founder coming from university as I did, and you want to create a business, all of a sudden, it's not necessary to think about creating roles like sales anymore because an AI is able to do it for you if it makes sense. Yeah, and you know the flaw in this is that you cannot change from today to tomorrow large organizations like General Motors or whatsoever because they are built brownfield on this other idea. Yeah. But we need to think about how to now combine these two new approaches of how would the business look like if it would be created by an AI first approach, and how do you move from what's already existing into this AI first picture, and that's an interesting change that's posed on the whole society, right? Because if you think about this. Coming back also to this Champions League thought, there's always going to be a role in the physical world like sales, branding, controlling, da da da. But you need to be super brilliant in that, and it's like you stepping into this world and this is your role, and around there can be all of these AI agents, and this is the change that we are going to see in society, right? So do we really need to have first graders to university organizations built on this step-by-step approach on teaching children to be something that is maybe not meaningful, or does it need to be something different, something more directly connected to this Champions League approach, right? So understanding what your children are really good at and just focusing on helping them to grow in this direction and not posing them to or not telling them to be also good in Greek history or whatsoever. And I don't want to also value it against each other. It's just like finding the right topics in your life. And that's going to be radiated into the society.
You know, I think it questions. I mean, I have two children in German education systems, and you look at the things that they're learning. I think this fundamental knowledge is important because it gives you perspective and it builds the worldview, you know. But at the same time, as I think some of the things that aren't necessarily proactively chased or, you know, prioritized in our education system, wherever it is in the world, they're the things that maybe are most important in a world where there will be change. You know, if we know that the world that we were educated in the world I was educated in, not even kidding, things like a set of earphones were sold door to door still. So salesmen had to go face to face and knock on a door, you know. I was before the internet. You and me are probably old enough to,
I know.
to know what that means. But the other side, for our children and this generation, it's things like interest and inquisitiveness about the world around them, interest in technology, you know, interest in ideas. These are things that are really, if you want to take it to the bottom of the equation to factorize what's important, that's where I'd come to. And then we have to create a world, I guess, where those skills are nurtured so that whatever technology tools or aids, and of course we're pushing aside the whole idea that there's a mega race of AGI coming in the next 10 years. Let's push that aside and just say, what skills are invaluable no matter who you are? And it's those things because, you know, you mentioned brand and sales. You know, I lecture at the School of Marketing within the business school in Amsterdam. And we're talking about this in our discussions about marketing. If people are using ChatGPT to choose which headphone to buy, is brand important anymore? Or is it just getting the top of the algorithm on the web, you know, or is it how you work with influencers, you know? So there's all this whole world is just, as we've talked about, it is changing. And then it's about having, it's not just for our children and education, it's about in our businesses, How do we think about those core functions in business? Which ones are essential? Which things can humans do less well than AI? And they're anyway probably the things that aren't very exciting and that we can quickly automate. And, you know, and actually this is a good chance to really transition now, because we've been talking about, you know, really deep philosophical questions about society and where we're going, but our podcast is called The Optimist. So I want to get a bit optimistic with you now and tell me about what's getting you excited. What are you excited about in technology in the next 5 years?
Exactly. So I'm super excited about what's to come here, right? Because in particular in this field of human machine interaction and having some, so this augmented augmented possibilities, using the global knowledge for something that I would like to do and I would like to achieve, be it in video, be it in all the channels and all the things that I really like, really love to do, and you know, the for me this is so except besides all this dystopian things that you could also imagine, for me this is a super optimistic future, right? Because we all will be able to use AI and technology to do what we are really good at and to have the freedom to work on that. And and now this whole notion of, I mean, if I think it was yesterday or last week, of okay, not only having this question answer interaction model with AI, but someone who's really also like in a human conversation stepping in and bringing new thoughts without waiting for my answer. That's I'm super excited. I'm super excited about this. And although I at the beginning, you remember I told you of being super super offline, I really enjoy right now to have very long conversations, super nerdish conversations with AI on topics that I'm interested in, right? Because it's now the first time that someone is really taking a conversation on this, on all this crazy thing that you want to talk about. And if this is going to also then propel into something more not so mechanistic, I mean, come on. That's going to be a super nice world that we are going to live in. So people that love cat pictures on the internet are able to find someone to talk about cat pictures on the internet, and this is a message of hope, yeah. And not something that we should be afraid of, because all of a sudden, all your obscure hobbies, all your obscure interests, you are able to find someone, if it's just an AI, but maybe also to find someone through the AI that's also interested in these topics and has also a super detailed, super nerdish, super sophisticated conversation on that. Yeah, and one of my examples, I mean, my brother's also a mathematician. He has done his PhD thesis in a super super, super specialized math topic that's even specialized for mathematicians, right? So it's so abstract that some notions that he worked on is beyond comprehensiveness for me being also a mathematician, because it's so crazy. But now he's able to talk to an AI about this, and this AI is going to have a conversation. Back in the days, there were just 5 people being interested in that. And now there's this... there are all these models you can talk to. And I mean, this is a super interesting, it's going to be a super interesting time going forward.
Well, Jochen Ditscher, senior partner at Roland Berger, it's been such a pleasure talking to you today. And I love that vision of the world where we can become specialists and in themes that we're interested in without having to spend, you know, 8 years at university like many of us have had to do in the past. Thanks so much for being a part of the Optimist podcast.
Thanks for having me. It was a super nice conversation.
Thanks for listening to The Optimist. For more insights and updates about tech, visit us at tech-europe.org. The Optimist is produced by Tech by Handelsblatt. Music by Christian Heinemann. Stay curious.